This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Over the past several months, we've been seeking your suggestions of Vermonters we should talk to who've lived interesting lives. We've tried to capture some of these wise voices and their incredible stories. You have given us so many suggestions, and it's impossible to cover them all, but we're just thrilled to talk with some of these fascinating Vermonters. This month, we are going to hear from Henry Weinstock of Jericho. He recently sat down with VPR's Rick Singeri to relate the odyssey that helped him survive the Nazi occupation of Belgium during World War II.
I was born in the city of Antwerp, Belgium, in 1934. We came to America in 1946, my father and I. My mother and father were divorced. My father and I both survived the Nazi occupation of Belgium. He really did not have an academic background for writing. However, he was an avid reader. He came from Hungary. He came from a working-class family. He decided to sit down and write his memoirs. And it begins with the invasion of the German army in Belgium, May 10th, 1940. It begins with the Messerschmitts flying above us. We knew that the war was coming, and we still had time to ask for visas to emigrate to America. However, we procrastinated that departure just a little too late. And in deference to that, we were stuck in Belgium. So here we are. Maybe there's a possibility of us going from Belgium to France, from France to Spain, from Spain to Portugal, and then ultimately finding passage on a freight ship to America. Alas, it was too late for that. As we were trying to get away from Belgium, we made it almost to France, but not quite, because we didn't have the right papers. We were not considered allies of the German army, of the Axis, because my father was Hungarian, and the Hungarians were part of the Axis. The Horthy regime was very supportive of the Nazis at that time. So here we are, stuck between Belgium and France. And the book that my father wrote about his experiences in Buchenwald begins with a description of what it was like for us. So shall I read that passage? Sure. I think it's very, very exciting. He talks about the experience of a child experiencing the very first day of World War II. We're talking about May 14th, 1940. And see, in the scale of human feeling, nothing is more terrible than to watch your child's anguish. A child fears death more than an adult. My six-year-old son was no different from other children. His terror weighed more heavily upon my heart than my own dread of Nazi airmen who were machine-gunning the escaping thousands. I remember in which Henry said to me, "Papa, lie on top of me so the flyer can't see me." That's how close the Messerschmitts were flying above the escaping refugees. I realized how a child thinks. It is inconceivable that anything can happen to an adult, in this case, the father. His father is eternal, indestructible. A child fears death, however, and an adult is like a god.
How scared were you in that moment that he describes?
Well, there was death all around us. We saw people scattered, all of us trying to escape. Bicycles, pedestrians, people on top of each other. And by the side of the road, we saw cadavers. We saw people who just were not part of the convoy of humanity. It seemed bizarre. It seemed like a surrealistic dream, but it was real. I remember finally we get to the French border, and they say, "No, you do not have the right at the station to cross the border. You are considered an enemy alien, because you are Hungarian." Actually, he was Hungarian, and I was stateless, because I was born in Belgium. So that made us even more of a pariah to the authorities. So it was a very difficult moment, indescribably painful for everyone. So we had to go back to Belgium.
And then what happened to you? I mean, here you are with me, so you did survive, but what happened?
The laws interdicting people who are called Jews, we were not allowed to go into parks, schools. Every major public institution was restricted if you were a Jew. You had to wear a Star of David to conspicuously indicate that you were a Jew. All of a sudden, we were Jewish, but we never practiced our religious commitment. We were totally indifferent to it. In fact, my father was a Marxist. He was more of an atheist, a combative atheist, against any kind of religious affiliation. But the Nazi occupation made it necessary that we display ourselves as conspicuous Jews by having the Star of David, born on the left side. Children who were under six did not have to wear it. But my father decided, you know what, you're not going to wear it, and I'm not going to wear it, regardless of the law. And at this point, what could the consequences be of refusing to wear that star? We had no idea at that time that there were concentration camps, that in these concentration camps there were people being deported, children, women. Anybody who was deported usually was condemned to death. I mean, the idea that there were concentration camps where there were gas chambers, crematoriums, that to us was inconceivable that such a phenomenon existed. It's only after World War II that many of us learned about that. The inmates, of course, learned it when they were there.
At some point, though, you were taken in by the Catholics, correct?
My father, through his underground activities, before he was deported to Buchenwald, met a very kind, a true humanitarian, a Catholic priest by the name of Edouard Froidure. He was very sympathetic to the plight of families that were trying to escape the racist laws. He said, look, I will baptize your child, and he will no longer be considered a pariah. He will be a good Catholic. And I was baptized, and ultimately I fell in love with the Catholic religion. I became a Sacred Heart child, and I had my communion, and my highest aspiration was to become a Catholic priest. But it was still not safe. If they knew that you had a Jewish ancestry, they gave us a definition of what is a Jew. Who is a Jew? The whole racial law made it almost scientific. Who could be a Jew, who could not be a Jew? They had their own ersatz philosophy, how you can create a biological mechanism vis-a-vis the superiority of a human being and the inferior. That's what's called racism. And we were considered the pariahs. Even if you were baptized Catholic, it didn't matter. You were still eligible for the worst experiences possible that the Nazis had planned for you. As a Catholic, I was hidden. I was taken to the Sisters of Besançon in the Ardennes of Belgium, the southern part of Belgium. This was one of the areas that many Americans are familiar with. They call it the Battle of the Bulge region. We were there from 1942 to September 1944. We were protected by the Sisters of Besançon, who were very kind. They knew that 83 of the children who were in hiding there were Jewish, but they never revealed it. The Gestapo came. They were always saying, we don't know about these 83 Jews. We don't know how you heard about it, but we do not have Jewish children. After all, the Jews did crucify Christ. They came up with that rationale, and they were left alone with that. The idea that we were protected by these nuns was, of course, a great attestation to the kindness of these religious nuns. We were there for almost 2 years, 2.5 years, until the liberation, and the Americans came to Jamoigne, and we thought, my God, Americans all the way from the United States to the village of Jamoigne to bring us chocolates, because we were obsessed with food, the lack of it primarily. So we fought amongst ourselves to touch the first American soldier. We didn't realize that they who liberated us would ultimately suffer in the Battle of the Bulge. Months later, how one American soldier came because he had lost his brother who had just been killed. Little moments like that, very painful when you think about that period.
Did you have to go by another name during that time period?
Yes, we all had to change our names. In fact, I have a list of the 83 children with their authentic name vis-a-vis their baptized name. My name was not Henry Weinstock, but it was Henri Albert Gérard, very French. Sometimes we would forget. You know, children don't have the better memories. And we were very proud with our new names. The saddest part is that we were completely incommunicado with our parents. That, to a child, in the scale of human feeling, is more terrible than anything else.
You've seen a war, World War II, yes, from ground level, mm-hmm, like very few people have ever experienced. So what can we learn from what happened then? What can we learn today from that?
Personally, this is my prism. When you espouse too much fanaticism in any kind of thinking, where you become almost dispassionate to your fellow human beings in the name of that thinking, this is the consequence. When I think of a photo that I've seen in one of the many concentration camp issues where there's a German soldier shooting a woman holding a child. How can a human being do that? How can anyone be so denuded of compassion that you actually have a gun and you shoot a woman holding a child?
A few years ago, you had a reunion.
That was 1991 at the Commodore Hotel in New York City. We had a reunion of the 83 Jewish children who were in New York City. This was absolutely the most remarkable reunion. And I said, you know, there are times where the English language, the French language, any language cannot really articulate the feeling that we have. We shared so much together. Most of the 83 of us who were there had lost their families. Very few of us had found parents or any family. So we were family. We were the surrogate family. So there were moments where we just looked at each other, touched each other, but we couldn't talk. It was such a beautiful moment. There are certain experiences in human existence that is beyond description, beyond articulation. This was one such moment.
How much of your own family did you get to see after the war?
Well, fortunately, on my father's side, my family came to America. On my mother's side, this is my mother's sister's children, this Jackie and Judy, 2 years older than me, 4 years older than me. This photograph was taken in the morning of 1942, sometimes in November. A few hours later, these two children with their mom and dad were arrested. They were sent to Malines, from Malines to Auschwitz. They were just a question of a few hours, and I would have been with them, exterminated in the gas chambers of Auschwitz. The rapidity in which these things transpired is unbelievable. With their parents, mom, dad, we never heard from them again. We did hear that they were ultimately exterminated. So just a question of a few hours, and I would have been with them.
After you were separated from your family,
yes,
did you ever get to see the rest of your family?
My mother's family was, they were all exterminated. My mother's sister and her two children exterminated. She did have some cousins. They survived Auschwitz, which is miraculous, and they lived in New Jersey. They came to New Jersey, and of course they established their own family.
Surviving these experiences, it seems like you are very grateful, and is there a way you've lived your life because you survived that experience during World War II?
Well, I think you begin to question things a little more. Whenever there's an opportunity to manifest for peace on Earth, for any kind of organization that will promote dialogue, that will promote understanding, I try to explore the possibility of more compassion in our behavior. And even if you do meet someone who is dispassionate, try to have a dialogue. At least that's the only sensible approach to survival.
That was Henry Weinstock of Jericho recounting his incredible journey, narrowly escaping the German army during World War II. He spoke with Rick Singeri. After reaching the United States, Henry became a French literature professor, and he is an avid lover of classical music.